Chapter 4. The Centers and the Personality. We will now consider the centers as controlling factors in the life of the personality in the three worlds and their relation to each other, always studying the subject from the angle of their relation to one of the three major planetary centers, Shambhala, the hierarchy, and humanity, in connection with 1. The point at the center, 2. Related energies, 3. Sphere of radiation, 4. The triangle of energy. The abstruseness of this theme is very great. A basic statement will, however, serve somewhat to clarify the subject. It is a statement which has seldom found expression elsewhere. Let me phrase it as simply as possible. The centers below the diaphragm, i.e. the solar plexus center, the sacral center, and the center at the base of the spine, are controlled by the 4 ethers of the planetary physical plane. The centers above the diaphragm, i.e. the heart center, the throat center, the ajna center, and the head center, are controlled by the 4 cosmic ethers, to which we give the names of the energies of the buddhic plane, the energies of the atmic plane, the energies of the monadic plane, and the energies of the logoic plane. This statement involves a somewhat new concept. It creates a basic relation, making possible the fact that, as above, so below. Think this out. It has serious implications. The centers below the diaphragm are, during the evolutionary process, controlled by the first, the second, and the third ethers, counting from below upward. When evolution has brought the aspirant to the point of personal integration, then the energies of the highest, the etheric atomic plane, can and do control. When that takes place, then the possibility is present of the energies of the cosmic etheric planes bringing the centers above the diaphragm into full expression. This takes place upon the path of discipleship and the path of initiation. This interesting process of transference of energies is called by several names, such as radiatory substitution, energizing at-one-ment, and inspirational reflected light of energy. All these terms are efforts to express in somewhat inadequate words what happens when the higher energies are substituted for the lower, when the magnetic pull of the spiritual energies draws upward and absorbs the lower energies which are concerned primarily with the personality life, or when the reflecting light of the spiritual triad and of the monadic glory are transferred into the higher energy centers in the final vehicle used by the developed human being. Little has as yet been given out anent the relation of the 4 physical ethers and the 4 cosmic ethers. There is, nevertheless, a direct relation between them, and this the initiatory process reveals. This also brings about significant changes in the vehicles of humanity. There is also a direct relation between the 4 aspects of karma, the law of cause and effect, and the 4 physical ethers, as well as the 4 cosmic ethers. This relationship will later constitute the basis of a new occult science. Therefore, there is yet much to be grasped by students concerning energy, its emanating sources, its mode of transfer, or its transitional processes, and its anchorage within the planetary body or the physical body of the individual. With some of these ideas we will now deal, thus laying the foundation for future investigation, but saying little which will be of immediate use to the individual student. It is relatively easy to list the 4 cosmic ethers, and then list the 4 ethers of the physical plane as we know them, and then make the statement that the average person is controlled by the centers below the diaphragm, which are responsive to the physical plane ethers as they transmit energies from the 3 worlds of human evolution, and that the initiate is responsive to the cosmic ethers as they play through and awaken the centers above the diaphragm. It must at the same time be remembered that the 7 centers in the etheric vehicle of man are always composed of the physical ethers, but become, upon the path of discipleship, the vehicles of the cosmic ethers. To retain the picture with clarity, it might be well to consider very briefly the 4 aspects of the centers as I have listed them above, or that totality which they present to the eye of the seer. These are, 1. The point at the center. This is the jewel in the lotus, to use the ancient oriental appellation. It is the point of life by means of which the monad anchors itself upon the physical plane, and is the life principle, therefore, of all the transient vehicles, developed, undeveloped, or developing. This point of life contains within itself all possibilities, all potentialities, all experiences, and all vibratory activities. It embodies the will to be, the quality of magnetic attraction, commonly called love, and the active intelligence which will bring the livingness and the love into full expression. The above statement or definition is one of major importance. This point at the center is in reality, therefore, all that is, and the other three aspects of life, as listed, are merely indications of its existence. It is that which has capacity to withdraw to its source, or to impose upon itself layer upon layer of substance. It is the cause of the return of the so-called eternal pilgrim to the Father's home, after many eons of experience, as well as that which produces experiment, leading to eventual experience and final expression. It is also that which the other three aspects shield, and which the seven principles, expressing themselves as vehicles, protect. There are seven of these points, or jewels, expressing the sevenfold nature of consciousness, and as they are brought one by one into living expression, the seven sub-rays of the dominating monadic ray are also one by one made manifest, so that each initiate disciple is, in due time, a son of God in full and outer glory. The time comes when the individual etheric body is submerged or lost to sight in the light emanating from these seven points and colored by the light of the jewel in the lotus in the head, the thousand-petaled lotus. Each center is then related by a line of living fire, and each is then in full divine expression. Much emphasis has been placed by teachers in the past upon the killing out of the centers below the diaphragm, or upon the transference of the energies of these centers into their higher correspondences. This I also have pointed out in other writings and instructions, because it is a definite way in which to convey essential truth. These methods of expression are, however, only symbolic phrases, and to that extent are true. Nevertheless, at the close of the evolutionary process, every single center in the etheric body is a living, vibrant, and beautiful expression of the basic energy which has ever sought to use it. They are, however, energies which are dedicated to divine and not to material living, and are clear, pure, and radiant. Their central point of light is of such a brilliance that the ordinary eye of man can scarcely register it. At this point it must be remembered that though there are seven of these points, one at the center of each lotus, there are only three types of such jewels in the lotus, because the monad expresses only the three major aspects of divinity, or the three major rays. 2. The related energies. This expression has reference to what have been called the petals of the lotus. With these differentiations of the various energies, I seek not here to deal. Too much emphasis has ever been laid upon them, both by Oriental and Occidental writers. There is far too much curiosity about the number of petals in any particular center, about their arrangement, and about their coloring and quality. If these matters interest you, you can search in the standard books for this information, remembering as you garner the proffered information that you are not in a position to prove its accuracy. Its usefulness, therefore, to you is highly problematical. I write this for real students and for those who seek to live the life of the spirit. The information which theorists seek is amply provided for both by me and many other exponents of the technicalities of the ageless wisdom. All I would remark is that as the point in the center is the point of life and the permanent, persistent, eternal one, so the related energies or petals are indicative of the state of consciousness which that eternal one is able, at any stated point in time and space, to express. This may be the relatively undeveloped state of consciousness of the savage, the consciousness of the average man, or the highly developed consciousness of the initiate up to the third degree, or the still more vibrant awareness of the initiate of still higher grades. It is ever concerned with consciousness. Only the point at the center is concerned with the first or life aspect. The petals concern the second or the consciousness aspect, and this must be most carefully borne in mind. The state of the consciousness is ever indicated by the size, the color, and the activity of the energies which compose the petals of the lotus. Their unfoldment and their development is conditioned by the governing rays, as well as by the age and the length of the soul's expression. The extent and the nature of the relative brightness is also conditioned by the point of focus in any particular life, as well as by the trend of the thinking of the soul, which is in incarnation. It must be remembered here that energy follows thought. The natural focus or point of polarization is at times most definitely offset by a man's line of thought, whatever that may currently be, or by the fact that he is living, consciously or unconsciously, the life of every day. An instance of this can be found in the fact that a disciple's natural focus might be the solar plexus center, but because of his fixed and determined thought, the energy which he wields can be directed to one of the centers above the diaphragm, thus producing a temporary atrophying of the center below the diaphragm and the consequent stimulation of that which lies above that dividing line. Thus are the needed changes made. When the cycle of evolution is nearing its close, and the initiate disciple has well nigh run his course, the energies are all fully developed, active and vibrant, and are therefore consciously used as essential aspects of the initiate's contact mechanism. This is often forgotten, and the emphasis of the student's thinking is laid upon the centers as expressions of his natural unfoldment, whereas that is of relatively secondary importance. The centers are, in reality, focal points through which energy can be distributed under skill direction in order to make a needed impact upon those centers or individuals which the disciple seeks to aid. These impacts can be stimulated or vitalized at need, or they can be deliberately destructive, thus aiding in the liberation from substance or matter of the one to be aided. It is high time that students paid attention to the service angle of the centers and to the focusing and the use of energy in service. It is here that the knowledge of the number of the petals which form a center is involved, because this knowledge indicates the number of the energies which are available for service, i.e., 2 energies, 12 energies, 16 energies, and so forth. No attention has hitherto been paid to this important point, but it embodies the practical use of the new occultism in the coming new age. The Oriental symbols, which are often superimposed upon the illustrations of the centers, should now be discontinued, because they convey no real use to the Occidental mind. 3. The sphere of radiation. This obviously concerns the radius of influence or the outgoing vibratory effect of the centers as they are gradually and slowly brought into activity. These centers, or their vibrations, are in reality what creates or constitutes the so-called aura of the human being, even though that aura is frequently confused with the health aura. Instead of the word frequently, I had almost said usually, because that would be more definitely correct. It is the etheric body which indicates and conditions the aura, which is presumed to demonstrate what the personality is, emotionally and mentally, and, occasionally, what is indicated of soul control. This is not a false premise, and I would have you register this fact. It is, however, excessively limited in its import, because the aura is, in reality, indicative of the subject's centers. From the study of this aura, certain things can be ascertained. A. Whether the development is above or below the diaphragm. B. Whether the centers are undeveloped or developed. C. Whether the nature of the controlling rays is adequately clear. D. Whether the point at the center and the petals of the lotus are controlled or whether a balance is being achieved. E. Whether the personality is outgoing and is therefore in a state of livingness, or whether a withdrawing is taking place due to introspection and self-centeredness, or to the slow oncoming of the death process. F. Whether the personality or the soul is in control, and whether, therefore, a struggle between the two is going on. You can see, therefore, how revealing the aura can be to the individual who has the ability to read it with accuracy, and how thankful you should be that such a capacity is relatively rare, or is in the possession of an initiate or of a master whose nature is love. The sphere of radiation is a potent instrument in service, and its extent and purity of contact should be cultivated by the pledged disciple. There is true occult teaching in the statement in the New Testament that the shadow of Peter, passing by, healed. His aura was of such a nature that it had a beneficent effect wherever and whenever it touched or contacted those in his environment. The control of the Christ over his aura was such that he knew when virtue had gone out of him. He knew, therefore, that healing energies had poured through one of his centers to a needy person or group of persons. It is the aura and its potency of attraction and its stability which also holds a group together, which also keeps an audience listening, and which makes an individual of importance along some definite line of approach to his fellow men. The sphere of radiation is easily determined by those who seek it out and who watch the effect of the radiation upon people in their community and environment. One highly emotional person, working through an overdeveloped and uncontrolled solar plexus center, can wreck a home or an institution. I give this as an illustration. One radiant, creative life, consciously using the heart or the throat centers, can carry inspiration to hundreds. These are points well worth careful consideration. You must, however, bear in mind that these centers are brought into activity by the cultivation of certain major virtues and not by meditation or concentration upon the centers. They are brought automatically into the needed radiatory condition by right living, high thinking, and loving activity. These virtues may seem to you dull and uninteresting, but they are most potent and scientifically effective in bringing the centers into the desired radiatory activity. When the task is done, and when all the centers are living spheres of outgoing radiatory activity, they swing into each other's orbit so that the initiate becomes a center of living light and not a composite of seven radiant centers. Think on this. 4. The central triangle of energies. This central triangle indicates unmistakably the three rays which condition a man's periodical vehicles, as HPB expresses it. These are the monadic ray, the soul ray, and the personality ray. To the watching and attentive master, it is also apparent which ray is the controlling ray, but this is not possible to anyone below the grade of master. Disciples and other onlookers must form their conclusions from the nature of the sphere of radiation. An element of error can creep in at this point, which is not possible to a master. It must, however, be remembered that until the sixth initiation of decision, the monad guards two secrets, but loses three when it takes control and the soul fades out. This I may not further elucidate. I have here given a somewhat new slant or picture of the centers. It is one of great value to students could they but realize it, because it is not truly in line with the information given to them in the occult books. An understanding of what I have said will lead the earnest student to a more practical application of his attitude to the centers, and also to a fixed endeavor to make his sphere of radiatory activity more useful to his fellow men. The reason for this will be that his attitude will express the quality of the subjective spirit, and not the quality, hitherto rampant, of objective matter. Forget not that the etheric body is a material and substantial body, and is therefore an integral part of the physical plane. Forget not that it is intended, first of all, to carry the energies of the emotional and of the mental plane in the unconscious experimental stage of incarnation. That it is also intended to carry the threefold energies of the soul in the stage of consciously gaining experience, and that also, as the antakarana is built, it is intended to carry the energies of the monad in the stage of consciously expressed divinity. See you, therefore, the beauty of the spiritual process and the planned aid given to the sons of men at all stages of their return to the center from whence they came.